You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My final guests today are here to answer our questions about COVID-19 in the city and borough of Juno and in our schools. Welcome Robert Barr, Deputy City Manager. Hi, Robert.
Shelley.
And Bridget Weiss, Superintendent of the Juno School District. Welcome, Bridget.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, we have a lot to talk about here. And Robert, I'll look to you first. We are currently at level 3. What does that mean for Juno residents and businesses?
Thanks. Thanks for that question, Shelley. So at level 3, masking is probably the biggest thing that we are communicating that is required now in any indoor public space. And an indoor public space is really any business or facility, public or private, publicly or privately owned, that is accessible to the public at large. So you can think of that as really anywhere outside of your home. There are some other community mitigation strategies that we have in place at level 3 that involve some size limitations for restaurants and bars and gyms, and some limitations on personal services being by appointment only, as an example. But really the big one that we hope everyone hears loud and clear is to mask up when you're in an indoor public space. We know that masks are very, very effective at controlling the spread of COVID-19.
Last Friday, the City and Borough of Juno presented the information about what it means when we go to level 3, what sort of rules go into place there. In a virtual press conference, what were some of the biggest questions that came up at that press conference?
You know, there were a variety of questions there. I think the ones that people always ask about is, what are we seeing from a perspective of vaccine breakthrough? What does it look like, or what are we hearing from the perspective of when people are going to be eligible for vaccine boosters, or whether we're going to do vaccine boosters, or the news that the CDC put out a little bit ago now about third doses for people who are immunocompromised? And, the main message on vaccine breakthrough is that, yes, it is possible, and we do see people who are fully vaccinated contract COVID-19, but we know still that the vaccines are really still highly effective at even preventing the transmission of COVID-19. So when we see cases of COVID in fully vaccinated individuals, normally that's in households. Where close contact is sustained for long, long periods of time, and where people are unmasked. We don't see a whole lot of transmission between and to fully vaccinated people when they're just out and about in the community. So, our message there is that please, if you're not vaccinated yet, really think seriously about it. It does work to prevent transmission, and it works even better to prevent hospitalization and death.
And Robert, on Monday, you were quoted as saying to KTOO's Jeremy Shea that, quote, it's our highest caseload to date, about double the caseload that we were experiencing in November of last year. In that article, it mentioned that public health was having trouble keeping track of keeping up with the contact tracing. And of course, November was the peak of the last wave. So have there been any developments since that story came out just a couple days ago?
Unfortunately, we're still reporting high case counts. I did anecdotally hear public health today say that, maybe we can be hopeful based on what they're seeing coming into them just over the past 24 hours, that we may be seeing the peak of our current peak. But that's still speculation at this point. Based on the numbers that we're reporting, we are still rising.
We have big cruise ships at the dock every day now, but this doesn't actually appear to be the main source of our COVID infections from what I'm hearing and reading. They're local. Well, what seems to be helping there with the cruise ship passengers?
Well, the biggest factor in the cruise ships is that they are highly vaccinated populations. So many of the cruise ships that you see come into town are 100% vaccinated, fully vaccinated. And those that aren't 100% they're all above 90%. Additionally, none of the cruise ships are sailing at full capacity right now, which means they have spare berths to house people who do test positive and people who are close contacts of individuals that test positive. none of those people venture into the communities, and none of the cruise ships so far that have been here have had any challenge in dealing with the number of positives or close contacts aboard their ships. So, you know, they test often, especially anyone who is symptomatic, and they have that vaccine requirement. So, you know, from our perspective, those are the tools, in addition to masking, that is really enabling them to continue to operate their business right now.
That's just interesting to me, because you think of that population being so contained, and there'd often be, you know, outbreaks of other types of viruses on cruise ships in the past. But now that containment is actually working to their advantage. So that's a change.
It's really a testament to how effective the vaccine is. It's just highly, highly effective right now. We are super fortunate to have this vaccine. You know, back when the vaccine was being developed, what we were hearing from vaccinologists and virologists and the experts that we consult with at public health was that, you know, we'd be super lucky if we had a vaccine that was seen as 50 or 60% effective at preventing transmission. They knocked it out of the park, right? We have a vaccine that is so much better than that.
Thank you, Robert. Turning to you now, Bridget. Bridget Weiss, superintendent of the Juneau School District. Kids are back in school. In-person learning has resumed. It's been about a week and a half. What kind of start are we off to so far?
Well, we're just off to a fantastic start. You know, it's been 2 years since we had a more traditional first day of school, and the energy in the community at our schools was really palpable on August 20th when we started. Everybody's just so excited to have kids in school. Parents were excited to have some of our kids their first day of school. You know, we had kind of two groups of that, both our kinders and our first graders. So it was, and many transitions going to middle school for the first time, or high school for the first time, or senior years. So there was just a lot of really good energy, and people are just excited about the in-person learning that we're doing.
And how are kids and parents supporting or handling the COVID safety restrictions and the masking policies?
You know, one of the most critical things that we're doing is our mitigation. We could not be functioning without them. And so we've had tremendous support. Our families, our kids, they're really stepping up to the plate and supporting these mitigation strategies that we have. And they're just critical. As Robert mentioned, you know, our access to vaccine is really important to our operations. And we, of course, serve a population of students under 12 that cannot yet be vaccinated. So for us, when we are bringing children together for learning, and they don't have the option of vaccine, the other mitigation strategies just become all that more important. And so we've had great compliance with masking. Parents are cooperating and calling their students in ill if they're not feeling well, so that we can maintain that symptom-free environment, which is, again, just super important to us, as well as all the other layers we have in school. We have you know, hand washing, hand hygiene, air purifiers going. We have shields up when kids eat lunch, and all a variety of different things in different settings to come together to create that mitigation. We've had great cooperation.
Oh, that's great to hear. Although I have been hearing that the spaces indoors, the schools, maybe outdoors as well, can't always accommodate the 3-foot to 6-foot distancing per the school district protocol. Is the district considering any other options to cut down on crowding when it's a problem?
Well, it is, you know, we are an environment that it makes it hard to distance 100% all the time. And part of that is space, but part of it is just simply we are serving children, and children move, and they have to move to be able to really learn effectively. So we rely on a combination. Everybody has heard about mitigation layers. You know, it's like when you want a gourmet burger, you want lots of different things on there. And so it is all those mitigations that come together. And distancing is one of the mitigation factors that's definitely the hardest for us to maintain consistently. But that's why we have masking. That's why we have a nice percentage of our students, we believe 12 and up, that are vaccinated. We have the air purifiers. We have everyone, kids and adults, masked. So distancing is one of many layers, and it does get harder the younger the students, right? Because we know that there's more movement at our primary grades, as an example. So how that plays out is when we do have a positive case that shows up, then there's more likelihood that we would quarantine a classroom rather than a few kids, the younger the kids, just by the nature of what we are doing the best we can in terms of learning, teaching and learning in our schools.
Got it. And when a student does test positive for COVID, because despite the all the measures in place, there have been some positives, their close contacts are notified and they all need to stay home. But how do you determine who is a close contact and who isn't when you've got, you know, all these kids moving throughout a room throughout the day?
Sure. One of those things is we need parents notifying us right away, which they are. So that's super helpful. So as soon as we're notified that we have had a case that was present in the building during the time that exposure could happen, then we start the process. And one of the strategies we're using right now, because we simply are limited on time to respond on occasion, is quarantining the classroom for a day while we do that contact tracing. And we ask all kinds of questions of the teacher about how the class is configured, what kind of contact there is, where, how they eat lunch, if they went to a special, which would be like music or PE or library. And we get all that information and then we make a determination. And again, the younger classes we're finding, it's harder to only quarantine some. The older ones were able to narrow it down a little bit based on the definition of close contact. So that's what we're doing. And then we notify everybody right away. The cases that we've had so far, of course, just coming into the school year, what we're finding is, of course, these are cases that have happened in other environments outside of school. And so we are following all of our guidelines, of course, to quarantine where we need to and to keep learning going. But these cases that we're seeing are cases, many siblings or family, as Mr. Barr mentioned, once it's inside of a family, we are seeing that transmission. So we're watching siblings closely and so forth. So that's our response. We make those decisions and then we communicate them. It is disruptive. But now, especially for our 12 and under, it's what we have to do to maintain our in-person learning. We're going to know a lot more in 2 to 4 weeks as to how well this mitigation works against this variant, in particular for children under 12. Right now, it's working from everything we can see. We are definitely the most mitigated environment that students are in. They are less mitigated when they're at home, when they're outside, when they are at many youth activities in town. So what we know about our environment at schools is that we really are one of the best, most mitigated environments that our children are in. We think that's gonna pay off, especially if we continue to have our community, if they have been hesitant about the vaccine, if they make that decision and we continue on that trail as a community, then it's all going to come together, and it's really important for our kids that it does. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
I can tell that you're very serious about it and taking everything extremely seriously. Can you envision a scenario where the school district would return to virtual learning?
We are definitely poised depending on the need. So right now what we think is, we know, first of all, we know so much more about the virus than we did 1 year ago today. Like so much more. We know how it transmits. We know what mitigations mean when they all come together and layer up. And of course we have vaccine, which we did not have a year ago. So our staff is highly vaccinated. Many of our families are highly vaccinated. Many of our kids now are highly vaccinated. So we're in a very, very different place. So we think we have many other strategies before shifting completely to in-person learning that we just didn't have it in our toolbox a year ago. So that would mean perhaps like we are now, quarantining classrooms and stopping in-person learning in classrooms for 5 to 10 days, depending on all the timing. It could be potentially that we need to close a school for 5 to 10 days or something like that. If we thought that there was some sort of transmission happening inside the school, or if we had staff impacted some way and we didn't have enough staff, adults, to run a school. But those are all intermediate steps we would do before we made major broad stroke changes to our operational status.
Bridget Weiss, superintendent for the Juneau School District, thank you so much for answering my questions. I know it's been very tough. And Robert Barr is with us as well. Thank you so much. We are out of time for today, but juneau.org/COVID-19 is where you can find more information about anything we've talked about today. Robert and Bridget, thank you both for your time.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you for having us.
Take care.